Gary Nobum couldn't be here today, and I raised my hand and volunteered to give his presentation, so I'll do my best. Now, Gary has written a book called Where Our Food Comes From, and it involves reassessing Nikolai Vavilov's notion of centers of diversity, the implications for conservation and on-farm use of in the face of global change. And I might mention that Gary Nobum is in the Department of Geography of the University of Arizona. How can we use Vavilov's notes, articles, and photos as benchmarks to locate centers of crop origins, assess changes in diversity, and interpret the causes of temporal shifts of diversity? And so Gary has set a task before himself to determine where the wild relatives of crops were historically distributed, and to determine where multiple lines of evidence suggest that a particular crop were initially cultivated. To understand the spatially and temporally clustered patterns of sequential domestications, that could suggest a center of crop origins. And he wants to filter out the effects of change through time. Today we have powerful analytical tools from genetics, paleoecology, archaeology, and linguistics to delve into such questions, but we seldom have an integrated approach involving all four of these domains. And so this sounds like an exciting proposition if you ask me. Over the past 15 years, Gary has been on a team revisiting the fields in 11 countries on 5 continents in which Vavilov had inventoried. Over the course, travel is far easier to do today than in the days of Vavilov, the Harlins, Fairchild, Pompano, or Meyer. Vavilov had to master mules and mechanics, and as well as the languages. As Paul Goetz and Gary agree, there's a high correlation of Vavilov's centers of crop diversity and origins with Meyer's hotspots of wild or plant biodiversity. But the Vavilov centers of diversity are not origin per se. Many are now artifacts of what is called hotspots, where protected areas are designated, where residual diversity has been protected by cultural forces in some areas but not others. In such cultural landscapes, food biodiversity remains a dynamic set of resources changing through time and space in response to many natural and cultural factors. Genetic consequences of reticulate evolution, i.e. the episodes of introgression and isolation of both wild relatives and with local or introduced cultivated land races. Secondly, changing climate, soils, pathogens, and pests, changing cropping systems and culinary uses, and changing cultural management practices. All of those can change the cultural landscape. So what kinds of change? Harlin and Vavilov may have been first identified the process of genetic erosion, but it is often hard to measure, and it's not driven solely by one cause. So the process of genetic erosion, first articulated by Vavilov and codified by Frankel, has been more difficult to document than initially imagined. Time series data are not generally available for crops or agriculture, and so comparing measures of biological variability are used at different times. So Gary was trying to figure out how he could best track such a change. And so he said, let's find time series of reports from the same place since first explorers inventoried that location. Standardize the names because folk varieties can have ambiguous names, and so they could use fingerprinting techniques perhaps to confirm that the same things were there. Compare the rates of loss between snapshots and correlate with socioeconomic and agroecological changes. So So how do you measure genetic erosion? So you need a historic baseline, and Vavilov and the Harlins offer that historic baseline. So first, Gary gathered data on pre-modern crop populations. So to redo Vavilov's inventories at particular sites along routes in Central Asia, Ethiopia, Mexico, Lebanon, Mexico, and Southwest North America. And those of you that know Gary know that he's very interested in apples. I believe this is Dr. Zhang Miliev, who is in Kazakhstan and was quite involved in the collection of apples from there. Apples in their Asian Center of Diversity habitat have habitat fragmentation. And global warming has eliminated, Gary says, 70% of the ecotypes from wild forests. I do know that there has been changes and there's some losses, but I don't know about the 70% figure here. Anyway, to keep track of not just plant varieties in isolation, but also interaction among plants, animals, and human cultures is important in this task. So possible changes other than genetic erosion per se could be elements of diversity change through time continue to be regenerated at comparable rates. And many of the same elements present have shifted due to change in global warming, or diversity diminishes due to loss of farmers, where the surviving ones kept former varieties in a smaller area. Diversity increased by influx of new varieties, that's what was happening with the Green Revolution, or more rapid rate of in situ regeneration or exchange. The more exchanges that Gary has recorded were not triggered by introductions of hybrid cultivars or GMOs, but were due more to largely restructuring of agricultural landscapes. So he has several studies here. This is the first study. I think there's five altogether. The Western Pamir highlights Gorno-Baktashan in Tajikistan. And he took some snapshots of crop diversity and elevational amplitudes. And this was the study that was published. Now, in this location, glaciers are rapidly melting. The frost-free season is no longer, and wetter, warmer temperatures occur in most places. So the annual crop species now grown at a higher elevation than 80 years ago. Also, some tree species were getting the minimum number of cold days and no longer are producing fruit because they don't have enough chilling. So 50 crop species were tracked, but not many to a cultivar level. So it was kind of interesting for him to see the shifts in the upper elevation limits of annual field crops in the Western Pamir. You can see wheat, barley, rye, maize, and fava bean all were cultivated at lower levels at Vavilov's time, but in 2006, when Gary was there, they can now be cultivated at much higher elevations because of the warmer weather. Many farmers are not passive, but are dynamically responding to this climate change. They are planting fruit and nut nurseries every 500 meters in this particular valley. So they're taking advantage of the warming and the retreat of the glaciers. In case study two, in Highland Ethiopia, Gary's comparing Vavilov's visit and the present day situation. Vavilov focused on the Ethiopian Eritrean Highland Crop Center, but not the lowland Ethiopian Center of Wild Biodiversity. Vavilov was hosted by Haile Selassie Although politics determined his route, Vavilov transversed a remarkably representative cross-section of cereal agriculture. And here's two images, one Vavilov's on the left and as seen by today. The turnover of wheat and barley varieties during drought and famine, followed by a resurgence of teff. So there's now 500,000 hectares more of teff sown since the early 1990s. So today, there's a virulent back stem rust, UG99, that's attacking wheat. So the farmers have a choice. Do they breed resistance into the wheats, or do they focus on teff and minor grains? So that would cause then a change in the agricultural production of whichever the grasses they choose. So although the U.S. is not a center of diversity per se, Vavilov surveyed the native annual crops and wild succulents of Arido America in the southwest U.S. and Mexico. And by the way, those black lines are the 1921 trip of Vavilov, where I mentioned how he got a large part of the U.S. seen in that one particular trip, not only the U.S., but South America and Central America there. Ironically, Vavilov was arrested as a biopirate of Guayuli rubber in Mexico. His trip was cut short, but he was hosted by the universities of Arizona and California to see the same desert crops north of the border. Case study number three, the Hopi and Navajo Colorado Plateau in southwestern U.S. The oldest continuously managed agricultural landscapes in the U.S., there's a 4,100-year cropping span that's been known. 350 years of oral, written, and historic archaeological records are available for Hopi and Navajo mesas. The Hopi dry-farmed maize fields when Vavilov visited in 1930, and then today they are still doing the same. Hopi agrobiodiversity change. At 6 points in time, including a number of archaeological botanical data, he will show you. There's 37 crop species that were tracked from 1492 to the present. In 1935, there were 63 named folk varieties, and 90% of the food production was self-sufficient, and there was enough for fruit exporters. By 2005, 30 varieties were found. There's 47% net loss in folk varieties in that intervening 70 years, and there's only 20% food self-sufficiency. There's no exports and a higher decline in the number and percent of farmers. The causes of loss are drought, decline in farm numbers, language, erosion of ceremonial traditions and skills, and an increasing dependency on imported foods and fast food venues. Case study number four, the Siwa Oasis in Egypt. Siwa in the heart of the Sahara. Travelers' accounts, trade histories, and detailed agronomic reports exist since 1919. Siwa agro-biodiversity change. He looked at 4 points in time, 28 crop species in 1919. The food production was self-sufficient. 39 crop species in 2005, but food is imported. Perennials were slow to be lost, but some fruit trees were added through time. and there's a place-based annuals intact. The alkalinity and heat may slow the change more than other locations, and the remoteness, the value of haplophytic ecotypes. So, case 5, study in Baja, California. Gary looked at oases on Mexican's Baja California Peninsula, where harbor farms and gardens are large features that were first introduced by Jesuit missionaries from the 1697 to 1768. These are currently managed as diverse agro-ecosystems with original heritage food crop species, as well as new crops and livestock introductions. The isolated landscapes are relic sanctuaries for unique desert crop varieties. Historical records in 1774 describe 21 original perennial crop species. The introductions and cultivation in the peninsula was just after the Jesuit expulsion. Let me page up. So there were longitudinal studies in the agricultural oasis on the Baja Peninsula, and they can help determine the isolation of islands of cultivation as refugia. And he and his group determined that at least 15 of the original 18 mission-era introductions of perennial species persist in these oases. One additional species persisted on the peninsula outside of the original historic content. Despite this level of overall persistence, no species is cultivated in all 9 oases. Thus, an archipelago is needed for in-situ conservation. There's new threats to Siwa, sourcing Kalamata olives for the international market. 70,000 olives are already grown in Siwa for Egypt and the Middle East. Canada and Italy want to grow 500,000 Kalamata olives for European sales. The new protected area may slow detrimental change. And I guess there's an economic botany paper on this particular article. So strategies for maintaining agrodiversity in the face of global climate change: focus on the vulnerable zones. Look not only at where there are high rates of loss, but where climate change is forcing rapid distributional shifts, such as coasts and steep gradients in mountainous areas. Get diversity back in the fields by promoting farmer seed exchanges and experimental nurseries and common gardens situated along the gradients as resilient strategies. Initiate global monitoring network of traditional agricultural sites to detect and mitigate rapid changes in diversity. Working with farmers to set up longitudinal studies of change in globally important agricultural heritage systems, and correlate ecological and genetic changes in response to global warming. He would like to see investment in conservation strategies such as Parque de la Papa, 20,000 hectares where 1,200 plus varieties are grown out, evaluated, and promoted by local communities. Perhaps the Parque de la Papa in Peru is one of the best models for future in situ conservation. Other community models need to be tested. The Quechuan families now gain livelihoods from maintaining the tuber diversity, and they can market the food through the local markets. So there's new strategies for dynamically safeguarding food and agricultural diversity, as was mentioned. And Farmers and researchers need to collaborate on detecting and responding to changes in food and farming, biodiversity and cultural landscapes, markets, and kitchens. Don't forget farmers and cooks' knowledge of the crop. Do a time series of site and cultural specific case studies. Retrace Vavilov through additional countries and post findings on biodiversity. Bioversity International VAVA blog. That sounds interesting to me. And he's planning to use book and lecture tour and photo exhibits to encourage more discussion of this topic. So he wants to express his personal thanks to a number of folks that provided information to him. And we're all indebted to both Jack and Harry Harlan for being amongst the first to raise the issue of genetic erosion and for keeping before the scientific community the memory of Nikolai Vavilov and his co-workers at Vir. And our current and future efforts towards crop conservation inevitably build upon their work. Thank you.
I want to thank you, Gary, and I want to thank you, Kim. And Falter, would you come up here? And if there are any questions for the three of us or the four of us, this would be a good time. Any comments you'd like to make? But it's been our joy to present this workshop on Vavilov. He was an interesting personality. He had a large effect. Some of you know him. Some of you, this may be new to you. But this is a great man, and I think very interesting for the present and future of the world. So any questions from anybody or comments?
I have a question. You didn't comment, I don't think, on did Vavilov have children?
Yes, he did.
And do we know anything about what, if anything, they did to carry on his heritage, or for that matter, his students or assistants?
I think one of his sons has just died. I'm not sure. Do you remember?
I don't know what his I think he had two. He was married to one woman, and he had a mistress later on, and I think he had two children, two sons. But I don't know what they have done since.
Yeah. Be interesting to know. Yeah, yeah.
I haven't read much of translations of Vavilov's work, and I wonder if he commented on the relationships of crop wild relatives and diversity to the development of human civilizations like Kosinowski and Simon.
Yeah, that was part of his, he related it to human development. Yes, he was very much interested in that aspect of it. And it is, it's in his letters. Here's an interesting thing. There's some of his letters that are up there on the Vir site, if you look at the Vavilov historical section. And you can take and copy them and put them into Google Translate. And then see, it's not an exact translation, but you get the gist.
I have one question to you, Kevin. The new word synteny of different genes being found in different species, is this the explanation for Vavilov's homology?
That's I'm probably the wrong person to answer that. I think to some degree, certainly, because you're seeing syntenic relationships retained throughout all the grain crops and through other crops as we're looking at more genomes. And when you look at genomes together, you're finding those examples. But I think that you're probably, I would be more inclined to guess that this would be due to selection of those specific mutations and the specific changes in genes rather than whole chunks of genomes. Mm-hmm. That's just.
It's interesting that this paper of Vavilov, when it came out, he was compared to the periodic table.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was the same kind of concept because Mendeleev predicted by virtue of the traits that were found in the table in the major trends, mm-hmm. was able to predict that there must be something here. Yeah. And it was the same kind of idea that you could, by looking at the general traits and general trends, guess that something would be. Yeah.
But the law of homology has been kind of lost. Maybe it's coming back. What do you think?
Maybe. I think it's just that it's an idea that's overshadowed by more what appear to be more sophisticated concepts that really say the same thing, but just with more words and more resolution.
Question here.
Yeah, I just had a couple of quick comments. One was that it seemed that Vavilov had a great appreciation for the role of, well, for the role of mountainous areas as being centers of diversity. And the second comment was that he had a good appreciation of the role of indigenous farmers in preserving their genetic heritage.
I agree on both parts.
I have one question for you, Kim. Is it Vavilov or Vavilov?
I'm a Russian.
Any Russians here?
Vavilov.
Vavilov, okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Any other questions or comments from anybody? If not, thank you very much for your attention.